Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed at home in your Keurig coffee maker with Dunkin' cold K-Cup pods. Just brew it hot over ice and enjoy flavor that's crafted to serve cold. The home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, first up, a really funny Tales from the Cheap. Mike Lynch joins in, Fitz Dog as well, so be prepared to laugh.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Greg Fitzsimmons, with Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, and a spirited round of Tales from the Cheap. And now, still writing 2020 on the documents he has Fondelier sign in protest, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice. They got a mandate. You get it on. Thanks for tuning in 2021, and thanks for sharing the show, and thanks Naples, Florida, because off the hook, January 15th, 16th, almost sold out. So thanks for that. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
Handball, Brian.
I don't like kids, and I don't like hugs.
Oh, yes. That's from yesterday's show.
Yeah.
Kaylin came through with grabbing a couple drops.
That was cathartic.
Is Fitz Dog on hold still?
Yeah, he just oh, okay. He's in the waiting room. You want to let him in?
Well, yeah, give me 2 minutes because we'll do Tales from the Cheap. And I wrote down a few things. I think Gene and Bald may have something to contribute as well. Also, Fitz Dog probably, he got a prompt on it as well. So he might have some thoughts about cheapness in the family. Also, you know, we grew up. At least I did in a time. I think Gene and Brian too, Fitzdog for sure. Mike Lynch always famously tells us about the story about the bottom of the Chevette,
the floorboard
of the passenger side. I think on the maybe it was a Chevette. That could have been Kevin Hench's mom's car, a diesel Chevette, like the slowest car on the planet. But either way, the rust got it over there. In somewhere outside of Boston, and his dad used a stop sign and pop riveted on the floorboard to create a new floorboard, which is again it's cheap, but also shows some ingenuity. So
I
kind of like it. I have a cheap and ingenuity story myself, which lost me a go-kart race, and we can get into that. So should we bring Fitzdog? Should we play the intro and bring Fitzdog on after the intro? Take your calls as well.
20-year-old Tupperware, homemade clothes, powdered eggs. It's time for Tales from the Cheap.
Oh, powdered eggs. Good to see you, Fitzdog.
Hey now.
I don't know if you guys were ever experienced the powdered milk, which was a thing back in the day. Yeah. I had some friends. They'd have the Tupperware container, the tall boy Tupperware juice container with the flip spout on it. And I had a friend that did powdered milk, water, and maybe stepped on it with some actual skim milk, like cut it with some real milk. It just tasted like fucking watery ass. My thing was always, if you can't afford milk, you can't afford kids. Yeah. It's like the most basic product.
Like, that's the entry level.
Literally a mother's milk. You know what I mean? Like if you can't fucking afford milk, real milk, you give those goddamn kids away. But Fitzdog, you grew up in a fairly affluent home. with very interesting parents. I'm still very intrigued with your dad, especially, and your mom as well. But were they cheap?
That's exactly it. We had the money, but we didn't have the money. Like, they tried to live above their means. Like, we belonged to a country club, and it wasn't a fancy country club, but it had a golf course, and it was in New York, so it was all Italians and Irish. Mm-hmm. And it was called Knollwood, but my father would call it Cannoli Wood because of all the guineas.
Nice.
And we belonged there, but we didn't belong there. We would like my parents.
You didn't belong.
My parents bought me like these shitty children's golf clubs, mm-hmm. and no balls. And so I was forced for all the years we were there. I was the biggest thief at Knollwood Country Club. I would go in the men's locker room. And when the locker room guy wasn't around, I would go in the lockers and I would steal balls and change.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a snack bar, and we were given, my mother gave me a $10 booklet of money for a week at the snack bar, which basically meant you're going to have to steal coupons from other people's books.
Right.
Because everybody kept their books in a box at the snack bar, and I would just rip out dollar tickets so I could nourish myself.
So
the balls is the perfect crime there, because none of the golfers I know is going to know if they're missing one ball out of 12 or out of 15. You know what I mean? Just take a ball here, take a ball there.
Yeah. It was, unless it had like, sometimes they'd have their name on it.
True. Yeah. Monogrammed.
So
yeah.
You don't take those. You take the ones that are clean. You take the clean balls. And, there was a lot of thievery, and we were like the white trash family at the country club.
Yeah. Fitzdog was trying to steal the balls, and it's like, God, these Titleist brothers are all over the fucking place. You can't avoid these guys. It's the Nike family and the Titleist family.
Right.
There's only two people at the club.
They would have buffets on Friday nights. They would have a buffet, and my parents would pay for one of us, and that one person would get a plate of clams and go to the side of the porch, give them to the other kids. It was like a fucking scam. It was a classic move. Yeah, it was like the Depression for us, but we wanted to belong to a country club, and so they crawled their way in.
I'm not sure what's worse, although I do think maybe it's a grass is always greener, but there's the cheap families because they're dirt poor, which at least has context. And then there's the cheap families who have some money, which actually is kind of rubbing it in, because now it's like they do have money. They're just choosing to make me steal clams, golf balls, and and meal tickets.
When you talked about powdered milk, that just made me think of, we had friends growing up in all just, you know, kind of regular middle class Kansas, whatever. But at one friend's house, we were only allowed to have two things for snack. And I had never heard of either of these, and I wouldn't recommend them to anybody, but the kids loved them. They were called Old Nellies or Woe Nellies. It was a piece of white bread buttered with sugar on it.
Oh, yeah.
Which was horrific.
Yeah.
And then for dessert, you've heard of this?
That's not dessert?
Sounds like dessert.
No, for dessert, they didn't have ice cream because ice cream was too expensive. So they would freeze Cool Whip and dole that out. And that was your ice cream. But these were like regular, Kansas, they were our neighbors.
Yeah,
you know, the thing about the powdered milk is it's really like the people, like back when I was poor and I could only afford to put in $4 at a time into my gas tank of my truck or something. It ends up being so much more work. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And without any savings whatsoever, and the potential of being stabbed at an Arco in Arlita at 4 a.m. Right. But... And running out of gas.
You had to go to the Arco because it was 4 cents cheaper a gallon.
The powdered milk is, it's not free. You have to buy a box of powdered milk, and then you have to make it. There is the production time. There's what are you worth an hour kind of thing. And then there's the final product, which is horrific. So you have the money, you have to spend the money, you have to take the time, and then the final product tastes nothing like milk. So for actually the price of a gallon of milk, you're A, probably breaking even once you factor in your own goddamn labor, number one. And then number two, the product is so subpar that it's essentially you're punishing yourself, but you're also reminding yourself you're poor.
Yeah.
Every single time you open the refrigerator,
oh, yeah.
there's that big tub of powdered milk going, you're a loser.
Loser juice.
Loser juice.
And God forbid you want to have a friend come over for dinner. You're horrified.
Oh,
you have to hide your shame.
Yes. Yeah. I didn't have to talk my friends out of coming over for dinner. Once they
were on board.
Once they experienced the majesty of my mom's vegan lentil soup and actually eating a bay leaf that was floating on top of it and almost choking on it, it was like, we'll do my house and pork chops. And I was like, I'll be there.
My mother used to make a dish called, because I was born in the Bronx and my parents were poor growing up, so they never got out of, even though we had money, they never got out of that, like, poverty mentality. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
My mom, for dinner, I'm not making this up, she would make a thing called gluck, which she made up. And you take really low-end ground beef, you butter a pan, you sprinkle the meat into it, and then you serve it on buttered white bread, where it immediately soaks through and falls apart in your hands. No vegetables. I don't believe we had a salad once in my entire childhood.
Gluck.
That's a not a sloppy Joe.
Yeah.
No, because sloppy Joe would entail spices,
right.
tomato
it's a
sauce.
Not a sloppy Joe. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, right, right.
Gluck is also the name of a short-lived Nickelodeon game show.
You got that stuff dropped on you.
That's right.
Yeah.
I think the fact that it was scalding hot is what got the lawyers involved and shut down production almost immediately. Everyone went full Michael Jackson on the set of a Pepsi commercial. There's a timely reference.
That's right.
Good.
Yeah, my ingenuity meets poverty story was something I was reminded of recently, which is I went to an alternative school, kind of a hippie free-range school in like the third and fourth grade. And we decided to have a go-kart race where everyone would build their sort of downhill coaster go-kart in the garage of this school, which was sort of a house. And then we would go have a big downhill race. And here's an interesting tidbit. The downhill race, there's not a lot of closed off downhills in Los Angeles. I mean, you could definitely go down to Silver Lake and find a slope, but you could also hit a car that's coming up the hill. The old zoo, the old L.A. County Zoo. People don't know this. Maybe you can find this somewhere, Max Zapata. The L.A. County Zoo, which is kind of in Griffith Park now, that's the new L.A. County Zoo. The old zoo, 100 years old, is further down the way, probably a mile or two away, and one up the hill, and was all closed off, but had those paths, those big, you know, like if you picture the L.A. County Zoo, big wide walking paths going down the hill, had the old cages and stuff still in there.
Is there anything more haunted than an old zoo?
Yeah.
Abandoned
zoo.
Yeah.
They say if you close your eyes, you can hear the sound of a llama being sexually assaulted by a drunken keeper.
I've heard that.
The first zoo was called Griffith Park Zoo, and it opened in 1912.
Wow.
So by the time we got to the 70s, they just completely moved it, but they moved it like a mile up the road, and they built a new zoo. I wonder when it was decommissioned.
It closed in 66.
Well, I got to think, if you make it through the Depression, if it started in 1912, those cages were not to keep the animals in. They were to keep people from coming in and eating.
Right.
With skewers.
Yeah.
Yes. So we then went up there and had the big day and the big race. And I was kind of the odds-on favorite because I was sort of the cracker jack. I was sort of the athletic kid, and I built a cool cart for myself and so on and so forth. But here was the issue. Wheels.
Oh.
Wheels ain't cheap. Like, they had the hardware store, by my old house, and you could see those red wheels, if you can kind of picture those ones with the ball bearing sleeve in the middle of them, and they had the 10-inch and the 5-inch and the 7-inch or whatever. Those things were like $12 a corner. And there's no fucking way the Corollas were ever going to buy a new set of wheels for their kids' go-kart, even though it would have been completely appropriate because it's a good project. You know, I built the go-kart. Now let's go buy the wheels.
Yeah.
No.
Between the go-kart and cars, did your parents never spring for a new set of wheels?
Never. But I'll tell you, we had an old set of wheels, and the old set of wheels was my whole childhood. We had this old power mower, this lawn mower, the old school push-the-mower style with the blade on the bottom. And, of course, the engine was all jacked up and the thing never ran. And it just sat in the backyard rusting out. And by the way, our lawn was either 3 foot high and brown or dirt. We didn't really – if you – Max Bad, if you have the picture of me jumping my BMX bike in my front yard, you can get a glimpse of the majesty of the Corolla's front yard. It was just literally a dirt front yard. And – somebody figured out, it was my grandfather who was sort of half involved with his family. I mean, with his grandkids, in the sense that he was sort of there and was sort of like, well, you're going to build a go-kart. We got to get wheels for it. And he found this old, if you can see a picture of me doing a cross up on my BMX
Whoa,
bike
when I was, nice.
When I was 11,
Sweet.
Catching good air, by the way, but you can see the brown dirt lawn that I was landing upon.
It's only brown dirt.
Wait, is that sunny?
This is SoCal too. You know, this isn't like, well, once the thaw hits, we'll put some sod down. No, this is like, this is SoCal. People don't have brown lawns in the middle of Valley Village, but yet there we were. So my grandfather pulled the four small white plastic wheels off of the old lawnmower that had been sitting out there. But the problem with those wheels is they weren't ball bearing wheels. They were just a plastic wheel that went on to a nut and bolt. And the nut, I should say, the bolt was like smooth and then threaded on the end when you put it inside of the mower housing. And it created a bit of an axle. But it was just a sort of plastic wheel rubbing on a steel shank. And
it wasn't built for speed?
No action.
What could go wrong?
No bearing. Like, I'll put it to you this way. If you would take one of those bearing wheels, put it on an axle and spin it hard, it would go around 152 times. If you did it to a lawnmower wheel, it would turn a half a turn and then stop, right? And it was like jiggly and everything. And my grandfather figured out that those are four free wheels. So he pulled the wheels off of the go-kart, or I should say off of the lawnmower. And then he had to figure out, how do we do an axle for this go-kart, and how do we attach the wheels to the axle? And he came up with a fairly ingenious plan.
Mop handle?
He took a piece of galvanized plumbing pipe.
Okay.
You know those caps you can screw on the end of the galvanized plumbing pipe? He took two pieces of that. He put the caps on the end. Mm-hmm. He drilled a hole in the end of the cap.
Ooh.
He then put the little axle with the nut and the bolt on it through it and screwed it in from the inside and then put the caps back on. So that was my axle. And everything was great, except for there was no rolling action in the thing. And other kids had the ball bearing wheels. Even one kid pulled them off a shopping cart, but they still had bearings.
Yeah.
And even though I was the odds-on favorite, when we got to the top of the hill and they dropped the flag, my thing just kind of lurched forward and just creaked forward, and everyone just blew past me. And then, of course, we got to the bottom. It's like, come on, Ace, don't you know how to drive a go-kart? And it's like, I got no rolling action whatsoever.
This fucking Paul Newman obsession, this racing is your fucking Rosebud.
Mm-hmm.
This is you trying to get
That's
back
right.
at the third graders.
I got to be fast and I got to be first.
Yeah. Right. Right,
we got
that. It's like the gumball rally for poor kids.
Yes. Also, it was a time when you could just show up at the old zoo with a bunch of hippies and go-karts and just have run of the place.
No locks, apparently.
They just kind of walked right in. And are there any old pictures of the old zoo, Max Pata?
I'm sure it's not touched at all. No graffiti, no needles, nothing.
Corolla's still stuck at the top.
My ghost is up there. They right. say if you close your eyes. So we have some good calls, but Gene, I know you got one, and I know Chris has one as well. Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. So this is I am within this Tales of the Cheap, and so is a lot of the United States. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but there is a Facebook group that is taking over the country. It's called Buy Nothing, mm-hmm. and you literally can put anything on there, and you cannot sell it and nobody can pay for it. You just, it's a, like a community giving, whatever. And so a bunch of my friends in New York were doing it. So I saw like, is there any over here? They're all over LA. They're all over everywhere. It's called Buy Nothing on Facebook. And I've got, I got an elliptical glider that's never been used. I've gotten this really cool serving wow. plate. I've given away clothes. Like, it's amazing.
I think,
however,
I think my mom and dad were charter members of Buy Nothing. I think they're, I'm what you call a legacy now, but,
they had grandfathered in.
They had formed.
Buster in the background.
Yeah. They're like those, twins that had the idea for Facebook.
The right. Winklevosses.
The Winklevosses. Like, their Buy Nothing plan was in place in the 70s. It just took the computer in order to really get it up on its
That's
feet.
Right.
Yeah. Wait, but Gina, you're a celebrity. Do you feel a little bit like there's a stigma to basically being on like an online flea market?
No, I love it.
Begging for free stuff from people.
Only one time, you know, because you do a lot of like wheeling and dealing, not like negotiating, but like, okay, I can pick it up on Tuesday, or, you know, do you need any extra clothes? Because I have this bag, whatever. And so we were going back and forth, and this woman's like, are you on the Adam Carolla show? And I go, yeah.
And she goes, can I interest you in this tissue used by one Adam Carolla?
She goes, I love the Adam Carolla show. Anyway, I'm not interested in your items.
Oh.
So,
that hurts.
So,
you should have charged her a cameo fee.
It's oh, seriously, $25 cameo, Gina Grad. It's so fun to do. And but I pulled some ones that don't, I pulled some pictures for you that are shamelessly on there from random people. A lot of people put expired food on. So that's a big one. But here, just Kaylin, just put up whatever, and we'll roll through them quickly. Three cans of Chunk Light tuna. If you would like to go to their house and give it away. A little bag of Swedish fish, a mini bag of Swedish fish. An almost completely used bottle of L.A. Lookout.
It's upside down.
It is so old and abused. They had to put it upside down so you could get the gel out.
I don't think that company exists anymore.
I don't either. Some broken pots, like broken the terracotta planter pots. What else we got? Oh, a little perfume left in all of these. Please take all. We got Poison. We got every grocery store perfume ever. And just a few droplets left in the bottom. And I mean, you can literally put anything. Oh, a lanyard.
There's got to be like a pair of lanyard. Size 9 British Knights tennis shoes, like high tops, or other like defunct companies from the 80s and 90s.
Yes. LA Gear.
LA Gear.
And it's great Stussy. Because like this, the little kid here is, you know, growing out of stuff so fast. So it's great to just, I don't want to sell it. I don't want to consign. I just want to give it away. Give it to any mom out there that needs 3T, 4T, take it. So it's really fun to do this. And it's the only other thing I wanted to add, even though some of these people are clearly clinically insane. You can tell the difference between when a man comments and when a woman comments, because one woman last week said, does anybody happen to have an extra Connect Four game? My kid loves Connect Four. I just lost my job. It's not a financially great time for us. Does anyone have an extra? The first comment was a guy going, have you tried fixing it? What's broken about it? Have you tried glue? Sometimes if it's the leg, it's glue. Three of us, including me, without even seeing that comment, wrote, what's your address? I'll have another one to you by tomorrow. I'll Amazon Prime it. That's what women do. But men go, is it broken? Have you tried gluing it? Maybe you should glue it. Has your son tried gluing it? No, I'll send you one. It's $10. I'll send it to you tomorrow.
By the way, when the Connect 4 is a little rich for your blood, I think, you know, these aren't great times for us financially is a kind of an understatement. That's got to be $9 brand spanking new, right?
That's why there were so many of us that were willing to just let me give you Connect Four. I will send it to your house. What are the games does he want? But it's a fun little community thing. But some of the things on there are truly comical.
Now, they're so poor, they only have Connect Three.
<That's good>. So, Gene, I'm sorry. Is that your contribution? Not
That's
that it's not enough. I didn't know if it, you had
good.
A...
That's good.
That's it. That's
I didn't
it.
Know if you had a personal family story that involved this.
No, I do this every day. I am all over Buy Nothing.
I like... I have a version of this, which is Latin guys who work for me. And when I'm looking in my fridge and I see $80 worth of king crab legs left over from a holiday gathering and nobody's going to touch the $80 worth of king crab legs, I then show up on the job site with king crab legs, half a cheesecake,
some chicken
that people don't want. And then there's the king crab thing doesn't translate. Like when you walk into a garage and guys are painting, you go, who likes king crab? Everyone just looks at you.
Yeah.
Then I have to hold the bag up and shake it. Then I have to tell them how expensive it is. And then I send it all home with them.
Yeah. Who wants some expired shellfish?
Yeah.
I got a couple antibiotics left in this bottle also.
Nothing says the jefe cares like expired shellfish. Now, I know no one got a bonus this year, but if you can dig out what's inside that thorny leg, I think you'll find your bonus.
All yours.
I remember we had a maid, and because we were rich but poor, she came once a month, and her name was Inez, and she was from Jamaica. And we used to take our stuff, and our stuff we got originally was defective. There was a place called Marshall's.
Yes.
There's still a place called Marshall's.
Oh, well, when Marshall's started, people don't remember this. It was only defective clothing.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Really?
Yep. It was all defective clothing.
Irregular.
Right.
It was irregular. And I remember I wanted a pair of Timberlands so bad, and that was out of the question. We wore like Latino guy at the worksite boots.
Right.
And so for my birthday, I open up a box and it says Timberland on it, but it's got a Marshall, but it's in a Marshall's bag.
Right.
And I put them on, and the sole is 3/4 inch further than the rest of the boot. So the heel of the boot would get soaking wet every time I wore them.
Yeah, you
and
could,
I'd be tripping over the front.
You could go to Marshall's and get like a pair of Adidas shoes with two stripes or an OP shirt that said OD on it instead. You know, like all these weird factory regularities. It was kind of like what they do with the Super Bowl losing t-shirts every year.
Right,
like they just send them to
Buffalo Bills 4 years in a row. World champs.
Right. Yeah. There's some impoverished village in Ethiopia that is lousy with Buffalo Bills shirts right now.
That's so Simpsons. Malk now with more vitamin K.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's how Marshall's started. Now they sort of have, I guess, everything that people don't want, but it's not defective. There were factory defects.
I think by the time it got to Gene is way younger than me. My generation, it was just overstock stuff that couldn't sell. It was my first and only pair of Z Cavaricis I got from Marshall's. Oh, that was I don't know if you guys remember Z Cavaricis. That was a big ticket item in the early 90s.
Yeah. Although it's such a weird conceit, like when you're in the ninth grade and you got a mouthful of braces and your hair's a fucking mess and you got zits and you think you're gonna pick up some hot chick because you have cool shoes.
Yes, or like, cool pants.
How would that
translate?
There been a girl that's like, well, Brian's not much to look at and he's got a losing personality and those fucking frames are horrible, but have you seen the label on his jeans?
Not Brian Bishop. Yeah.
That girl
every
existed.
Day.
That girl existed.
Oh, and speaking of braces, the dentist told me I needed braces, and my parents told him, no, he does. And what's this?
Big Madonna gap.
You can drive a truck through my teeth.
Yep. But so far, it's only been cock. All right, Mike Lynch is... is going to contribute. But Mike's family was insanely cheap, and my family was insanely poor, but they were so depressed. And, you know, if you think about it, hang on to Mike for a second. Think about cheap, like the essence of cheap. So the essence of cheap is I want to take my family out to a meal, but I don't want to pay for four separate meals. So we'll go to the Red Balloon cafeteria in Van Nuys and we'll buy the one meal and we'll tell the son to load up on shrimp and then he'll bring it back to the table.
Yeah. It's like getting one over on the man.
But the motivating force of cheap is still, I want this thing for my family. Oh, yeah. I just don't want to pay for it.
Right.
My family didn't want anything for their family. So they were just poor and sedentary.
There was no ingenuity.
Right. There's no, you know, get in the trunk of the car. We're going to the drive-in. Although if you think about movies, you can talk about all the different facets of poor, downtrodden and cheap families, but you really only need to focus on the movies. So my children's experience with movies pre-COVID is we will go whenever we want. And we will sit where we want. And when we get to the theater, we can eat. We'll order hot dogs or burrito or something, you know, Mexican food. We'll have a cocktail. I'll have a cocktail, like whatever. That is their version of a theater. Our version of a theater experience, we had to go into a war room like World War II, where we're like pushing around German tanks and stuff. Now, look, we'll go to the matinee at the multiplex. Mm-hmm. You get in and sit through a movie you don't want to watch. Mm-hmm. Then don't leave. Go to another theater. Wait till the movie starts. Yes. You're going to miss the first 20 minutes of it. But then you slide in after the guy leaves the door and you watch 2/3 of a movie you do want to watch. And then you go to another theater. And as far as the candy and the beverages go, you're going to have to keister that shit.
Oh, yeah. Put in your goddamn pockets.
We're going. You're going to experience the majesty of a Milky Way bar that's been in your hip pocket for an hour and 40 minutes. Before we actually open it in the theater. And just at that point, just eat the fucking wrapper. Like, do not take it out of the wrapper at that point. Just eat the whole thing. Just rinse it off and eat it. Like, and
don't forget about the standard, like, whatever they ask, you're 10 because that's where the cutoff was for a dollar more a ticket.
Right. We're going down to MacArthur Park. We're going to get you an ID. We're going to get you into this theater. We're going to smuggle in candy that we got at the liquor store because it's 40% cheaper than what's at the theater. Then we're going to have you spend all fucking day there and you'll go back and forth to the different things. And here's a dime. When you're done with this, essentially the movie theater is now going to lose money on you. When you are done bilking the movie theater, you use this dime, go to that payphone and call us and we'll pick you up in an hour. But by the way, before you use the payphone, you got to check the change hopper.
Yeah.
It could be another dime in there.
Right.
Wait, they gave you a dime. They didn't just say, don't accept the collect call. We'll know who it's from.
Yeah, right. Now, when we would go to the movies, there was a theater that was like three towns over and they wouldn't show new movies. All my friends were talking about Star Wars. I was talking about, you know, The Monkees.
All right.
The Monkees movie.
Sonny and Cher. Have you seen that one? All right. We got a bunch of calls up there. Lynch is going to chime in with some of his own cheapness. So we'll just roll it over into the next segment.
The Adam Carolla Show presents another honorable mention from the cutting room floor for the 2020 ACE Awards. For Best Impression, Harland Williams as various marsupials.
What would a koala bear sound like, Papa? Hey, hey, Papa?
Are you trying to seduce me?
Papa, what would some whore you met online sound like
if you
went to Barney's Beer?
Oh, my God.
Okay, what's a panda bear sound like? In a second.
Oh,
Papa?
All right, I don't want to be a dad. Thanks.
All right.
The 2021 ACE Awards are coming this December on The Adam Carolla Show.
It is a shame that Harlan has no kids with all those crazy animal voices, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a pretty good childhood with crazy Harlan doing all the noises like, you know, a macaw or a toucan. Fitzdog is here, Indianapolis Helium Comedy Club, tomorrow, Friday, and Saturday, as you hear this. Also, then Tempe Improv, next Thursday through Sunday. That's the January 14th and 17th. You can go to Fitzdog with a Z, Fitzdog.com for tickets. Mike Lynch has joined us, who has maybe the cheapest family of us all. Although I beat him in the poor department, I don't beat him in the cheap department.
Hey, Mike, he's talking about you, you fuck ass.
So, Mike, yes, we're
innovatively cheap as opposed to just cheap like your family.
Yeah. And again, I don't think my family's cheap. They were just super poor and unmotivated. So they just kind of sat there being poor.
Well, like you, Cool Whip containers were a commodity in our household. And they did get that pink color in them because they contained frozen tomato sauce.
Oh, yeah. Yours would be... So the first things first is everything that could possibly hold water and had a lid was considered a durable good. Like, yes, that was considered a big ticket item. My grandparents would never throw away like a pickle jar or mayonnaise jar, but it always had the weird rusty, crusty top on it. You know, it had that weird insert on the mayonnaise jar. And
I sent Chris a picture of one of my highlights of, there you go. So those were shrimp cocktail containers.
Oh, yeah, we had those.
Saucy, you remember those.
Yep.
They'd still have that whiff of shrimp cocktail years later when you were drinking water out of them.
Oh. Not only that, by the way, what's up, Lynch? Good to see you,
buddy.
Hey,
how you doing, Fitz Dog? Good to see you, man.
And they hold about 4 ounces, which I think was a calculated move so we didn't drink too much milk. It was just, it was like my parents would have a New Year's Eve party, and that was the fucking shrimp they gave out. They were about a quarter of an inch long. They'd been frozen for years. And then when they were done, that was our fucking flatware.
Yeah, but you could get them through airport security now, though.
Yeah. Didn't you get like botulism, old shrimp cups?
Of course.
The
risk worth taking.
These things are also sort of indicators. They're basically tangible reminders that you're not fully loved because they're like physical, actual, tangible reminders of that. Because as I always tell you guys, even when I was 25, I'd go to my grandparents' house and my grandfather, God bless him, make a huge pot of goulash. And I was like starving bachelor guy. And at some point, my grandfather, who was Jewish, would be like, well, take some of the goulash home with you. And then I'd go, oh, yeah, that'd be awesome. I lived a mile away in an apartment, you know. And my grandfather would go, I'll load up the Tupperware and you can take it. And I'd see my grandmother like shaking him off like a pitcher, like, not the Tupperware, not the Tupperware. The Tupperware's worth $4, you know, not the Tupperware. Give him the mayonnaise jar. Take the mayonnaise jar and fill it with the goulash and bring that home, the Tupperware. And it's kind of a weird conceit because it's like, what do you really think is going to happen to this Tupperware? The Tupperware is 22 years old and light no longer passes through it. Like, it's that marred. It looks sandblasted. Yeah. And it's like, but they just had this one Tupperware container, and my grandmother's biggest fear is that shit would never come back. You know, remember all those conversations of like people go, okay, you can borrow this crescent wrench, but understand this $9 wrench needs to come back. Like, you got to bring this. Like, if you're having long conversations about things that are under $4 and how important it is that they come back to your home, like, that was, if I ever got out of there with Tupperware, my grandmother would like tag it like a pot of whale.
Everything in our house had our name on the bottom. I assume it did in your houses too.
Yeah.
She calls them like the cougars. Did you bring back P-296?
Yes. Where is it? We followed it to Carpenter Street, North Hollywood, right. And then we lost the trail.
We never had Tupperware because that would assume that occasionally my mother made any more food than we could consume at one meal. Mm. It was always slightly less food. She would make for five of us. She would make five pork chops, and then my dad would take two. And then we would have to carve into thirds and do math to figure out who got the rest.
And that's the Jewish and the Irish part ways.
I was going to say, we had the different thing where she would make too much food and then freeze it for years. And then you'd have to chisel at it to get it out.
Yeah. So, Mike, beside the stop sign floorboard in the shrimp container.
Yield sign, to be correct.
Oh, sorry. Yield. Yes. Yield to my cheapness.
That was the classic.
What car was it on?
It was a Chevette. It was a maroon Chevette.
I think I got it.
I couldn't tell you the year, but yeah.
Any other good stories to regale us with?
Well, there was the classic. My sister had a Halloween costume that was a Hershey Kiss. Mm-hmm. It was composed of a trash bag and a tire, bike tire.
All right.
So there's a picture of that floating out there somewhere. And we, despite not actually being on welfare ourselves, we would take the government cheese from my grandmother, who was. Because it was
worse.
Too much for her. Yes. So it was not only government cheese. It was hand-me-down government cheese. It was an orange block.
Secondhand.
That a good Sawzall couldn't get through.
I will. I now have another one of these sort of demarcation things for, like, was your family poor? Over under number would be 8 on how many times you eat spaghetti that was served up with an ice cream scooper. Remember the bad cafeteria? They just scoop it. Like, each strand of spaghetti was 7/8 of an inch long, and it was just buried in that gooey red sauce, and they'd use that scooper, and it'd show up like a half a tennis ball on your tray. Ugh.
Hey, I don't know. Do they do government cheese anymore? How is government cheese distributed? How do you get your government cheese?
To the government.
Yeah.
Show up at your house and hand you a
block. Well, first thing you do is you vote for Biden.
Yeah, and is this surplus cheese that the military didn't want, or are they actually making cheese for the subjects?
It was actually used as shells during the Korean War, and they just repurposed it as cheese.
Other enemies.
Yeah, there was actually, and there was powder. I'm picturing the little pantry in the back. There was the government cheese, and there was also the powdered milk, which I know. Powdered milk and powdered eggs, which, you know, I know is one of your lines of demarcation ace for bad childhood.
Like, unless you're in a fucking foxhole, you should never get near powdered eggs.
How would rich man, poor man, too, because I think you got astronaut.
Or exactly. Mike growing up.
How do you even make powdered eggs? You mix it with water. I do kind of blame the space program for part of my shitty childhood because we were obsessed with like Tang and powdered, like just add water, like the astronauts. Like, yeah, you know what else the astronauts do? They pee into a fucking diaper. But that's not awesome when you're fucking on the ground, right?
Yeah.
Everyone was so like Tang was literally just sugar and orange coloring and a little like citric acid, and somehow this was fantastic because it's what the astronauts
it was space aged
and is it standard. And did the astronauts really have Tang? Like, do you think the scientists at NASA were like, we need something with zero nutritional value that weighs a lot and that is fucking covered with sugar? Like, for these guys that are trying to live in outer space, do you think really one of the NASA nutritionist scientists, do you think they really came up with Tang?
Gun to your head, Ace. Tang?
Tang was not made for space travel, but space travel made Tang famous. The sugary orange drink powder failed to take off upon introduction to the U.S. market in 1959. But once it launched with American astronauts in the 60s, labeled Orange Drink, Tang had the world's best built-in branding, according to military.com.
They probably had a healthier version of it, and then this was the commercial grade.
Adam, I was going to ask you, gun to your head, Tang or Sunny D? You have to pick one. What do you do?
Well, Tang tasted good. Sunny, I mean, it was bad, but if you're nine, it kind of tasted good. But Sunny D always tasted like ass to me, because the thing about, I guess, my taste buds is Tang was so far off of orange juice, it wasn't in the same category.
It wasn't trying to be orange juice.
It didn't compete. It tasted more like flat orange soda, whereas Sunny D kind of tasted like orange juice, but a horrible version of orange juice, and that's what always kind of bumped me. And
I think that's another demarcation, is they used to call it either fruit juice or fruit drink. If you drank fruit drink, you were poor. There was cheese, and there was cheese food. Do you remember that? Yes. Like Kraft?
Yeah.
Individual slices had to be called cheese food.
If it ever had the word drink or punch next to the flavor, that was a bad sign. That meant you were not getting the real deal.
Speaking of all this orange juice talk, we never had like a carton of orange juice, because that was for rich people.
Oh, yeah.
But did everyone else do the concentrate?
Concentrate.
And trying to just get that plunger down when you were a kid was very difficult. Is that poor people stuff? Because orange juice is in a carton.
The biggest, we had a Gelson's, which is still there, sort of near my house. And we had a Lucky's, which is, I don't know, John's or whatever, near Gina's house.
Which one did you go to?
Well, I would go into Gelson's only to steal turkey drumsticks. So Gelson's.
Ow. I didn't see that coming.
Well, Gelson's had the full deli, hot deli counter in the back. It was like
back
the very back left. Yes. And so when I was about 10, I'd go in there. I was always fucking starving, and there was nothing to eat at my house. Certainly not a Gelson's prepped turkey drumstick, like a huge drumstick. It's not an easy item to steal. You're better off doing a baker's dozen of hot wings, because you can kind of spread those around, you know. But the one drumstick was like, you know, the Fred Flintstone size drumstick. But I love the turkey drumstick. So I would go to the back of the Gelson's. I would order from the deli counter the turkey drumstick, but you don't have to pay at the deli counter. You pay in the front.
Yep.
So somewhere between having it in the back and the front, you'd have to kind of lose yourself and see if you could get out of there with the drumstick, you know, tucked in your inside pocket of your army jacket, or just sort of pretending like you forgot was in your hand. And I didn't have any money to buy any other items, so I couldn't really pad it out. But the Gelson's, you want to talk about the holy goddamn grail of orange juice. Again.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. The shit in the carton was way too expensive. Even the stuff from concentrate in the carton was way too expensive. Even the concentrate non-generic form was like too expensive. We had to do tap water and the Lucky Thrifty Scotch brand or whatever the fuck the knockoff shit was. But the Gelson's had a giant fresh orange juice machine. Have you seen one of these things?
The grocery store I worked at in high school had one of those, and we just fill it with oranges, and it would just press them and make freshly squeezed orange juice. You'd cap it off and throw a tangerine in there once in a while. Now you're living.
Yeah, the Gelson's one, I think, had this sort of hopper with orange juice, with oranges, and they would like roll down the flume, and you'd just see the action on it. And I would just sit there and stare at it like I was looking at a Ferrari through the window of a showroom, you know, like,
That was more technology than in your entire home.
I know. And the people that were actually purchasing the fresh squeezed orange juice at $6 a gallon, like, holy Christ, I'm going to stow away in the trunk of this guy's Mercedes. I don't care where he goes. And I would just stare at that thing.
We would go to C-Town, which was the shitty supermarket in town. And we were always hustling. It was like the Depression. That's why I wear those hats, those little newsy hats. We were always like angling to make a quarter or a dollar. While my mother would shop, me and my brother would try to get old ladies to let us carry their bags to their car because they'd give us a quarter.
Mm.
We were the guys that were in the fall raking leaves. As soon as it snowed, the other kids are fucking sleigh riding. No, we're shoveling driveways. We were constantly trying to make a buck. When we belonged to the country club, I started, fuck, they made me caddy from age 13 on. I weighed like a buck 05, and I've got one of those Rodney Dangerfield bags on my back. I'm walking past the pool. All the other 13-year-olds are laying out. They're playing pool tag. They're playing ping pong, and they're looking at me going, what the fuck is wrong with you? You're a member.
We got some calls up here. I like Joe and John and other John from Ithaca and Cleveland. Hang on. But Joe was told to bring his own pizza topping. So I'm very into this guy. Joe, 42, Seattle.
Hi, guy. Oh, real quick, I just want to say, Brian, your health update that you gave right before the break. Thanks for, like, updating everyone. I'm sorry just been here. It's been a tough last couple of months, but I know you said like you were worried that you weren't sure if it had come through on the show or not, but a completely honest truth, not trying to make you feel better, I absolutely couldn't tell. I thought you'd always sounded just the way you always had. So
Joe hasn't listened to a show since 2019.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. Not a good
thanks,
sign.
Thanks, Joe. I appreciate it. Very nice.
Yeah. No, I meant even better than normal, but you know, I hope 2021 will be a little bit easier.
Thanks, buddy.
Pizza.
What's your tales from the cheap?
So, well, it's going to be hard to top Gina's story about self-repairing a Connect 4 kit instead of just going out and buying another one. Gee, well, actually, so Gina, when you were talking about the post in the Buy Nothing group, did you have any guys that said this? Because this is the first thought that came into my head. You can play this game with pencil and paper, right? If your Connect 4 set breaks, you just draw it on a napkin.
It's called tic-tac-toe.
Did any guys? Right.
Yeah, no, not yet.
All right, Joe, pizza topping story.
Pizza. So Domino's and a couple other companies, they have like these coupons that you can order pizza for pickup for like $8, but they're very strict about, you know, three toppings only. And if you go over that, they start charging $1.50 or $2 for each topping. And, you know how this is. It's like even if you can afford it, if it starts out saying $8 and by the time you're done, it's like $14, you still feel like you got jobbed. So I have my own supply of things like, you know, the marinated mushrooms and the artichoke hearts and the capers supply. That I just keep, and anything that's not like the meat that has to be cooked into it to taste good.
All right, hold on. Gina, hypothetical.
Yeah.
In terms of, let's just say there was a flood in your vagina.
Sure.
And you needed to air dry it real fast.
Wow.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Guy who picks you up on the date with the Lyft Uber sticker on the car. Guy with the Ralph's Club lanyard hanging from the keychain. Or guy who brings own pizza toppings out on the first date.
Oh, wow. Wow. I think we know.
I think we know.
Oh, man. I mean, at least he said marinated mushrooms, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Is it because he preferred, if it was someone who was like, you know, I go to the, you know, I want the delicacy stuff. I want the artichokes. I want the marinated mushrooms. I'd be like, ooh la la, get a mop. But if he's just trying to save $1. Yeah,
these are green bell peppers.
Now we have a problem. Now he has edged out the Ralph's Club guy.
Right. But also, it's kind of catch-22 because if this guy is like, well, Godfather's doesn't have truffles. You'd be like, well, maybe you should go to a normal pizza place that's better.
Yeah, that's true. That's a very good point.
All right.
A good, nice, deep Godfather's pull.
Thank you. All right. We'll do one more. I know we'll do two more, but I know Lynch has a heart out. So I'm mindful of that, Lynch. Let's see. Let's talk to but Joe over here. That's self-imposed cheapness. That's not a parental thing or familial thing. That's him imposing on himself. John, 46, Cleveland.
Hey, guys. Happy New Year. So it is insane that you brought up fruit drink earlier, because my story is about my dad taking a stand over fruit drink with the county sheriff, and it's crazy you brought that up. So anyways, I grew up in Cleveland. This is not a net worth thing, by the way. My dad was very well employed. This is strictly about hating things that cost more money than he thought they should. So we did not grow up going to Indians games or Browns games. We went to indoor soccer games, and only on weeknights. Because I later found out the tickets on weeknights were 2 for the price of 1. So the day of the game, he would boil up some hot dogs, wrap them in tin foil, And then he would go to the local convenience store and get two little wax cartons of fruit juice. Oh. And I remember from age 9, they were 25 cents a piece. Oh, yeah. So he does this for several years. And then finally, we go to the game one night, they go through the bag, and they say, new policy, no drinks allowed from the outside. So my dad immediately demands to talk to a cop. So he starts getting into it with this cop over the two fruit drinks. And the cop does that thing that scared the hell out of him even as a kid. He starts mumbling into the walkie-talkie on his shoulder, you know?
Yeah.
So the next thing you know, the sheriff of Summit County, Ohio, is standing there going back and forth with my dad about allowing him to bring fruit drinks into the event. So he tells my dad it's for safety reasons because you could throw the full container of fruit drink unopened. You could hurt somebody with it, which, by the way, you guys probably know, did happen in Cleveland a few years later with a Browns game.
Oh, really?
Well, oh, yeah. The money. Yeah.
Yeah, the bottle game. The sheriff was right. You could kill somebody with a thrown bottle. So here's the money shot of the story, though. My dad tells the sheriff, I could use anything as a weapon. I could take my wallet out, and I could throw that and use it as a weapon. And I swear to God, as a 9-year-old, I actually remember thinking to myself, no one involved in this conversation thinks you're taking your wallet out of your pocket, let alone throwing it anywhere. So,
well done.
And my dad couldn't have pulled that one off because there was no money or credit cards or anything of weight inside of the wallet.
Moths.
A good wind would have kicked up. It would have spread its wings and went to the heavens.
Yeah, mine had plenty of money. He had plenty of money. He was an engineer.
Also, my dad could never do that because it always took him at least 20 minutes to get his wallet out of his pocket. So there's no way if an intruder attacked us, he could do it in any kind of timely fashion. There would have to be a long discussion about what a dollar was worth and how money didn't grow on trees. And you should talk to your mom. Thanks, John. All right, we'll do one more. Lynch, I know you got a hard out, so we'll – oh, you're okay. All right,
you can stick with – told the patient to hang tight.
Stick with –
he's a fan, actually. He'll wait.
Okay. One more call. John 53, Ithaca, New York.
Hi. Hi, Adam and gang. It's
Hi,
a pleasure
guy.
To speak with you. I'm a big fan. And I called because I had great stories about my father, who was notoriously cheap. He was a developer, and he owned many houses and apartment buildings that had lots of wooden decks. Now, of course, you know, due to upstate harsh New York weather, the decks have to be treated every year. Mm-hmm. So instead of, you know, going to the store and buying Thompson's water sealant like everyone else does in the world, my father would grab an empty 55-gallon drum and pour in a witch's brew of his own creation of pallets of linseed oil, paint thinner, and other various ingredients all purchased in bulk, and mix it together with a big wooden stick, and
was
then he would brag that he would treat his deck for pennies on the dollar. And then one year, he decided that he didn't even want to pay for that. So my father walked into the maintenance garage and spies a 55-gallon drum of dirty, used motor oil. And where some people see a problem, my father saw solutions. He, on the spot, decides that one kind of oil is as good as any other kind of oil and instructs his crew to apply the dirty motor oil as a treatment onto the wood decks. You know, solving two problems in his mind. Like he gets rid of dirty oil and doesn't have to pay for any more treatments.
I'm laughing because I'm picturing the homeowner after your dad just mopped the deck going, honey, I'm going to go out and smoke a cigarette. I'll be back to join you and my beloved family to watch the rest of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. I just want to have my...
I'm a little tipsy.
Yeah, looks like a Tibetan monk 2 minutes
right.
later.
It was an unbelievable mess. First of all, the decks never dried, so they just remained the sticky, tacky mess. Oh.
Yes.
Second, of course, the petroleum stench was unbelievable. It smelled like the Exxon Valdez had just wiped out in the front yard. And third, the wood sucked up the dirty black oil unevenly, so the wood just became this splotchy, sooty, nasty, gross mess that was absolutely horrible. And, of course, it cost a fortune to correct and fix the way it should have been done right in the first place. And that's typical for the tales of the cheap, as my father was famous for being you know, penny wise and pound foolish. He would step over dollars to pick up pennies.
Yeah, thanks, John. Yeah, my grandfather famously added a porch on his old house that we were flopping in North Hollywood, but he wouldn't just go buy new lumber. He bought used lumber, and the used lumber was from a pier that caught on fire. So it was like waterlogged. It was like bowed and propellered. It
reclaimed wood.
Totally uneven. And the shit, the only stuff that wasn't, you know, soaked with salt water had termites. And then he built this horrible, shitty, uneven, fucked up looking front porch that everyone would just trip over.
On one side.
Yeah, it was a fucking shit show. And so not only do you end up with a horrible product, but it's more labor intensive to build with a bunch of uneven, different sizes, different thicknesses, sizes of wood. And then you have to fucking live with it for 10 years. But that was Laszlo Gorog, everybody. It is also, but can we do this? You know, this like Drew always plays this card because like my dad was a product of the Depression. Like, all right, everybody, my family was poor. My family's cheap. They were fucking idiots. I'm not. You know what I mean? It's like saying, I won't stay in a hotel that's above three stories. Why not? Well, I was alive during 9/11. Yeah, okay. Now get the fuck over it and go up to the fucking 14th floor and enjoy yourself. Like, you can get over this shit. You can experience stuff and see stuff. And then that was Drew's thing. Drew's thing is like his dad was a physician. He always did well. But because he was 7 and a half during the Depression, Drew must eat out of a fucking coffee can for the rest of his life. Like, okay, now you're an adult. Get fucking over it. I don't.
It's his kids. It takes three generations.
Well, that's the
thing. Wash out.
It didn't happen to Drew. That's the crazy thing.
Yeah. He's got a little of that, but not nearly what his dad had. All right, Lynch. By the way, you can follow Lynch on Twitter at M. Lynch tweets, by the way. Chris has an example of a tale. What do you got, Max Banner?
All right, so first off, growing up with two brothers, we always got all of our Christmas gifts, anything, were always three of the same thing because my mom would always buy everything in bulk. And if we ever wanted to get anything name brand, it was always a knockoff. So for many years, I would wear Adiklas, which where the C and the L together kind of look like a D, but it's
Adidas. They're following you from a distance.
Yeah, so from a distance, it looks like Adidas, but they were Adiklas slippers and shoes.
Wow. Would you, like, mark them up, like, with a marker so
that I should have done that. No, I think about it.
Wow.
But I think it had a fourth stripe, so I got the extra stripe in that way. Another example is when you're, like, in Asian families, the grandma always moves in.
Yeah.
Yeah, so my grandma lived with me, and what she would do is she would take all of our old jeans and she would use them as floor mats. She would cut the legs off. So like my friends would come over and just like look at our kitchen mats and they would have like pockets because they're just denim jeans cut up. And she would use plastic bags to tie everything together. She would just roll them up and use them to tie other plastic bags together or like straws or anything like that. So she's really crafty.
Oh, so instead of rope, you just flatten out the plastic bag and wrap it around. Wow.
Everything was wrapped with plastic bags at home.
I remember I had a couple of friends. I don't know if this is going to happen in this country anymore, but I did have a couple of friends that had the grandmother who lived at the house, and it was long enough ago where the grandmother was like from the old country and had a thick accent or didn't speak English or something like that.
Mumbling
and she was always like, don't go in that bedroom.
Yeah.
Don't go in there. That's where, they were always a little mean and a little scary and kind of a little off put. Like, what are you doing here? You know, and it's like, well, there's a 10-year-old who's my friend, and this is his house too, bitch. So he like invited me over to fuck around. Like, God forbid they ever walked into the kitchen when you were in the kitchen. That was like, you know, sacred burial ground for them. If you were in the kitchen and then they came, well, what are you doing in here, boy? Weird accents and scary and just not sure what their backstory was and no talk of the grandfather ever. Like, we don't know who that guy was. But yeah, I had a few friends that had the weird grandma living at the house, which is a deal breaker if you ever bring a chick back, right? Like, that's the weirdest.
It didn't help.
Yeah, my best friend had a grandmother, and she was a Holocaust survivor.
Oh.
Or she was. She died last year.
Wow.
And so she's not anymore. But she had dementia, and the family didn't pay for health care. So you'd come home and she'd be in a house coat, and you would be driving, and she'd be on the road on the way to the house, and she was ancient. And she constantly thought you were her husband, and she would say, "Robert," and I'll tell you something. Making love to that woman, it was because she felt married to you. So there was this connection. It wasn't just physical.
I had a friend.
Meant something.
I had a friend named David, and I just thought of his grandmother's name, which I haven't thought of in a million years. And we would like want to go to his house. He had like kind of the party house, and we'd go there to, you know, drink Mickey's Big Mouth when we were 15 or something. But his ancient grandmother's name was Tata Marie. And she had this thick accent, and Tata Marie would like come out like, "You boys are making so much noise." And he would like start yelling back at her. And it was so weird having weird ancient grandmother living at the house. I do have.
Is she Hungarian?
Tata Marie.
Isn't Tata like the name for grandmother?
It probably is.
Like Grandma Marie.
Yes. And they. The saddest knockoff, like, because so back in the day, obviously, you could go buy Levi's at the Gap or Rang or wherever, that Miller's Outpost, or, you know, where the cool people shopped. But if you shopped at JCPenney's like we did, you had to get the weird, shiny, tough skins or super denim jeans, you know, with the reinforced knees and all that kind of. So. Back in the day, JCPenney and Sears, for that matter, they didn't really have name brands. They just had their own brand, you know, and certainly JCPenney was that way. So they would always have the knockoff of the cool guy thing. And the cools, I would argue that the knockoff is more pathetic than just having nothing at all or some generic brand that right. No one's ever heard of, because this is you trying to be like the popular people and not succeeding. But there was a kid in my junior high in 1977, 78, Earth shoes were super popular. They're,
what are those?
Earth shoes were this crazy 70s shoe that was super ugly. They were like a suede Crocs. It was like Crocs before Crocs. They were okay. Big and round in the front, and they were like suede. And the thing about the Earth shoe was the heel was lower than the toe. You were basically like a low rider, essentially walking. Yes. Like everyone, you know how everyone wants to appear shorter with lower back pain? Well, that's where Earth shoe came in. Yes. So.
What's the point?
Well, the commercial, you have to picture the commercial. The commercial for Earth shoes was somebody walking in the sand at the beach. And they would show how you walked. And, of course, your heel would sink down lower than the ball of your foot.
They're like platypus flippers.
They're awful. They are ugly.
They're ugly, but they were popular. And it was like, this is how man was meant to walk. Yeah, on the beach. But yeah. Not on fucking asphalt at Walter Reed Junior High, you douchebags. But Earth shoes.
They're like clown shoes.
They're the ugliest. They look like orthopedic shoes. They look like.
But you can stop on a dime in those things.
Yeah, they look like the brake is always sort of half on. It's like driving around with the parking brake halfway pulled up. Yeah. Nobody stops faster than Earth shoes. Yeah.
Dale Sayers had those.
Yeah, as opposed to pumps where you just keep going. Wow. Yeah, they looked like the kind of shoes that had the metal polio brace attached to it, except for somebody just peeled it off, you know, like Forrest Gump style. Yeah. But Earth shoes were popular for some reason, and they had that campaign. You can probably find it, Max Zapata, but the cool kids had Earth shoes. Well, JCPenney wasn't going to leave money on the table, but they also knew they weren't going to sell any $55 Earth shoes to anybody at a JCPenney, and probably weren't like licensed to sell them. So they came out with their own shoe called Gass, G-A-S-S. and gas.
Now I know I'm getting everyone for Christmas next year.
By the way, Brian, I've used the shit out of the Mega knife you got me. Knife. That thing's it's a fucking game changer, man. I'm going to throw out the name of that thing, man. I did Korean barbecue. I went to goddamn town with that knife. That fucking knife is killer.
How many bottles did you slice?
Oh, my God.
I'm genuinely glad to hear this.
Trusted butcher knife. I mean, whatever that thing set you back, I got the use out of it already, and we're only 4 or 5 days into the new
genuinely
year.
Genuinely awesome.
It was awesome. Now, Earthshoe came out with a knockoff, or JCPenney did, and that was called Gas, two S's. And the most pathetic thing that I saw in my junior high was some poor kid bought the knockoff Earthshoe, the gas shoe. But of course, the Earthshoe had a rubber sole and the gas shoe had like a plastic, like a hard plastic sole. And his snapped right in the middle. It just had a clean break right in the middle because the front was higher than the back. And I guess there's just too much pressure when you try to take a step. And because it was hard plastic and not rubber, which is probably cheaper, it snapped right in the fucking middle. But it was held together by the flap of vinyl that was on the bottom, the insert of the shoe. So it was like an old-timey medieval hinge, like a door hinge made out of leather, you know? And this poor kid, now it drew all the focus to his knockoff Earthshoe because it had snapped right in the middle, and he was walking around with this popped Earthshoe, with this hinged Earthshoe everywhere. Yeah, that is fucking... Lynch, I don't know a ton about this, but that guy's probably still talking about this in therapy.
He's in my waiting room right now.
He's in your waiting room right now. All right. Well, a bit adieu to Lynch. Thanks for the contributions. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with more Fitzdog and the gang right after this.
Hey, movie lovers, who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Did you know that the bold, smooth taste of Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed in your Keurig coffee maker and enjoyed at home? Dunkin's cold K-Cup pods were crafted to be brewed hot and enjoyed cold. And of course, they're packed with the Dunkin' flavor you crave. Brew over ice and sip in seconds. Because the home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.